Welcome. My name is Cindy Wright, and I'm a program manager at the Child Neurology Foundation. Today's talk is part of our ongoing series on emerging issues that children and families with neurologic conditions are experiencing as a result of COVID-19. These sessions bring together caregivers and health professionals to have a candid conversation and provide their expert advice to the neurology community. Today, we're discussing what happens to IEP services and other services provided during COVID-19 school closures. And today we have Monica Jones and Denise Marshall to lead this conversation. So with that, I will turn it over to you two to introduce yourselves.
Thank you so much, Cindy. My name is Monica Jones, and I'm the visionary founder of the Brain Recovery Project Childhood Epilepsy Surgery Foundation. We are active members in several very key, important initiatives around the world of epilepsy, epilepsy surgery, and rare epilepsies, including the Infantile Spasms Action Network, REN, Epilepsy Leadership Council. But through all of this, I've had the honor of being appointed to the board of directors of the Council of Parent Attorney Advocates. Most importantly, I'm a mother, parent like all of you out there, of a child with multiple disabilities resulting from a history of epilepsy and epilepsy surgery. So I'd like to introduce you here to Denise Marshall, who's the executive director of the Council of Parent Attorneys and Advocates.
Thanks so much, Monica. It's a pleasure to be here. I am thrilled to be able to speak to everybody. The Council of Parent Attorneys and Advocates is a national network. We work to protect the civil and legal rights of students with disabilities and their families. I too have a couple of children and have been through the process, but also now am a grandmother. So on we go.
So Denise, I'm going to ask you a series of questions as a parent. All of these questions have been coming in from our community over the last several weeks. So hopefully we can provide some guidance to parents out there during this pandemic. So services and school closures are varying, not just state by state, but even district by district within a state. Why are some districts offering different services during school closures than others?
Well, this certainly is an unprecedented time, and there really wasn't very much warning. So I think it's fair to say that schools had uneven abilities to really rise to the challenge and provide the services quickly. So some districts closed and gave vacation time to their staff, others used snow days, and others went right into a service provision mode. So all of those responses are okay, but the expectation is now that we've had some time to adjust and to understand what the reality is for most school districts around the country to be providing some level of services.
Okay, great. We've heard that some schools aren't opening specifically because they can't provide special education services. Is this true?
Well, we definitely heard that initially as well, and it was happening in some locations across the country. Luckily, however, the Department of Education and the Office for Civil Rights put out a memorandum on March 21st that said that was a gross misunderstanding, and they made it clear that working to ensure compliance with civil rights through the IEP or Section 504 or the ADA should not prevent any school from providing educational programs through distance education. They have to provide FAPE for students with disabilities, and they have to work to provide and protect the health and safety of all students. But they can begin to provide and should begin to provide services for all students while they work to do that.
And FAPE is the acronym for a free and appropriate public education under the Individuals with Disabilities Education Act, right?
That is correct. Thank you.
Okay, great. Are schools required to honor IEPs and continue services throughout the pandemic?
This is a question that we continue to have a little bit of differing opinion on. The Department of Education issued guidance and said that if schools are closed for all students, that the individualized education programs or IEPs for students with disabilities were not required to be implemented during the closure. COPA, which has attorneys and advocates and family members all across the country, strongly disagrees with that. There is lots of history in guidance from the Department of Education and also in court cases that says the requirement to continue to provide that free and appropriate public education or FAPE is still there, and that they are still required to make sure that students progress. So, so in our estimation, yes, to the extent possible, and I'm sure we'll cover a little more about that as we move on, but that districts and families should work together to figure out which parts of the individual's program can be implemented and who will do it and for how long.
Okay, great. Some services can be provided online and some cannot. Can you explain what the restrictions are with services and why some schools are, for example, sending devices home with children and while some are not?
Sure. Well, this is something that's really going to vary first and foremost with each individual child, with their needs, and with the types of services and programs that are in their IEPs. But we also know that district personnel are made up of people, and they also have varying degrees of services and resources to provide to their constituents. And so again, some schools had the resources, they had tablets, they had connection devices, and they were easily able to distribute those. Others, districts are working towards getting those devices through possibly either through their existing funds or through the COVID-19 emergency funds, which Congress has authorized.
Okay. What services can't realistically be provided remotely? For example, for my son, he really can't attend to another person on a device. So we're finding that a lot of his services can't be provided remotely. Can you give us some examples there?
Sure. So again, this is going to vary individually with each child. Some of the questions that you do have to ask are, what are those services? What are the goals? Can someone other than the therapist work with the child in the home? Do they have the time? Do they have the ability to do that? Do they have the space? And then what kind of instruction and feedback is available from the therapist? We've heard all kinds of stories and information about, therapists providing information in writing to parents to demonstrate what they should implement, doing Zoom calls or other types of distance learning, calling on the phone to follow up. And then, as you said, some families are not able to provide. So certainly if someone, while some schools have actually chosen, depending on the laws in their state, to send someone individually one by one into the homes of students in their districts, that might not be feasible for other families, unsafe or against your laws in your state or in your current towns. So, things that require hands-on therapy are most likely not going to be able to be provided in the home if there's not somebody able to do so in the family who can follow a therapist's instructions.
Okay. Some schools aren't offering group therapy, citing privacy concerns, but other schools are offering e-waivers to participate in group therapy. Which one of these is correct?
Well, actually, depends on the situation in the state and what kind of online services they're using. I think some of the reasons that some districts were not initially approving is that they didn't want services such as Zoom, which don't have the proper privacy related constrictions available. So it may take some time to find the right online services to get people in the district and the families and perhaps their attorneys to agree what kind of consent is required and whether or not digital consent can work. So it's really something you also have to know your state laws and your privacy laws to determine what is really feasible and whether or not your district is comfortable moving forward with that type of therapy or not.
Okay. Are IEP meetings still happening? Can you still have an IEP meeting during a school closure?
Absolutely. The law specifically provides for IEP meetings by video conference or conference calls. And all over the country, they are happening on platforms like we're using today, using the telephone or other types of distance communication platforms.
Okay, great. Can I demand an IEP while classes are not in session or while the school is providing online learning? This is a question we get a lot, and I think you kind of answered it in your prior response, which would be yes.
Absolutely. You're a member of the team, and you can always request an IEP. It should be noted, though, that some states, like, for example, Connecticut and Massachusetts, do not believe that by the fact that the IEP will be offering or will be happening via virtual learning opportunities, they do not consider that a change in the placement or the program. So they would not require an IEP for services and things to continue. We do encourage families to try to work with school systems. You can amend your IEP just by written agreement with each other. You don't need to have a formal meeting to do that. There's actually some reasons not to having a meeting. One of the benefits of making sure that you don't do that is that all services, there would be no threat to services and programs being reduced inadvertently through that. So that they wouldn't give them the opportunity basically to take away services. So it's a personal decision, and it's also you need to know the requirements and your state policies regarding whether or not an IEP is actually required.
Okay, great. Some schools are sending out prior written notice letters. Actually, we're hearing about this quite a bit. What are those exactly, and how should a parent respond to one?
Well, typically the prior written notice under the law would be a letter sent to the family after an IEP meeting indicating a change in place or program or placement. But many of them are going out without any meeting being held, just providing parents with either notice or cessation of programming due to the closure. So if you receive such a notice and you did have an IEP meeting, you should check to see whether any of the concerns or requests that you made are noted in that notice. If you receive that notice and it's not individualized because there was no IEP meeting, you should document your response in writing and include any of your concerns, including whether or not the notice lacks any kind of specifics or isn't individualized to what exactly will happen to your child's program.
So when one of these comes in, it's a good idea to either write an email to the teacher or to the case manager, or even send a letter, if anyone's still doing that, documenting what the concerns are, right?
Absolutely. And that you have an expectation that certainly once schools resume, but if feasible before that, that services previously provided would also resume. So you should include both of those things.
Okay, great. some parents can't be expected to do any of the distance learning that the school is recommending. There are some of us out here that have children with multiple significant disabilities where at-home distance learning or therapies are really, really very difficult for a parent to do. What should parents like us do in that situation?
Well, the key here, I think, is individualization and communication, partnership with the school. So if that's the case, in any situation, you should be communicating with the school about your situation, about what your challenges are, and if possible, come to an agreement whether there is anything that's reasonable or feasible that can be done. If that answer is just no, then the school and the parents can agree that there will be that pause in services until such time as the situation changes. But I would make sure to put that provision in there that it's for time limited and it's due to the family's inability to basically act as the provider during the school closures.
Okay. This is kind of a specific question, but if there is no IEP meeting, do services roll over year to the next year, or will the district need to make up those services? So lost time, lost service time, I guess we want to know, do those hours just roll into the next year and accrue, or does the school have to make up lost service time? For example, if you were getting an hour of physical therapy per week, does that automatically mean you're going to get 2 hours of therapy per week for a little while to make up for that time lost during the pandemic?
Well, we do know that if there are no changes to the IEP, that the IEP would remain in effect in the next school year. But we can't guarantee whether or not there will be an automatic, increase in services. That will really depend district by district. Some districts may determine some way to figure out an increase in services in that situation, and others, it will be a, case by case determination based on the individual student's needs. So the two things in this situation we make sure, that people should do is document and communicate. So make sure you document your child's progress or lack thereof, and that can just be short little notes in a notebook to note whether or not things that they used to do they are still doing, or whether there's been any regression, or you can take little video clips on your cell phone and keep them in a file that can be used later on to document the need for additional services once they're able to be provided.
Those are great ideas, Denise. Thank you so much. So moving on, kind of the same question. Some parents are reporting their kids are regressing or having challenges while they're at home without services. Do schools have to reassess these children when they return, or can they just agree to provide more services now?
Well, sure, they can certainly agree to provide more services. As I said earlier, you can amend the IEP and make it provisional for what will happen during the closure. We really have to give a shout out to many districts because they really are being creative and responsive and providing things like ABA through distance learning, or one-on-one time for their child with their teacher, or whatever it is that might be necessary to help the child adjust to what must be an incredibly frustrating situation to them. It happened suddenly. There was no closure with people that they came to know and to rely on for every single day. They just all of a sudden don't see them anymore. So it shouldn't be surprising to anyone if students are facing challenges, and schools should really make a good faith effort, and many are, to do what they can during this closure. We don't know how long schools will be closed for this time, or we don't know whether or not a formal reassessment is going to be required once they do reopen.
So we should just document what's happening, can continue to communicate, and then revisit this when the schools reopen, the issue of reassessment.
Yes. And I mean, one would certainly think that that would make sense, that they would have to figure out a way to determine whether or not people are still, or students are still on par, or whether they've progressed, or whether they've progressed, because we just don't know. So that certainly is something that I think we should, that makes sense to expect, but we don't know whether or not how schools will be approaching it. But you should have a firm idea through the documentation as you move forward and be communicating all along what is happening, so you have an ample record to document whether or not a formal assessment or reassessment is required.
Is needed. Okay. If a school is offering a lot of services via Zoom, but a parent can't manage all of those Zoom sessions, what will happen if they ask the school to provide fewer services? Or is the school going to hold that against them if they decline services during this time?
This is another one that falls in the communication and documentation category. Just make sure that you document that this is a provisional agreement that ends when school resumes and in-person services are provided.
Okay. My child, this is true. We're reading questions here from our community, but I can tell you this is true for my son. My child really struggles with transitions. Will schools try to ensure that they have the same teacher and the same classroom when we go back after the school closure?
Again, we really have no idea at this time. I mean, certainly that may be something you're able to request, but we don't know when schools are going to resume. There are several states who have already closed for the entire school year. There are some states who are talking about that they might need to go into the fall with this distance learning, which just seems incomprehensible at this time, but may turn into be part of our reality. So this is something, again, we're going to have to keep an eye on and figure out, because we don't know whether students who are in, for example, grade systems, whether they will just automatically be promoted to the next grade, whether some students will graduate, whether some students will remain where they were. There's going to have to be a determination made. And if you have thoughts about that, your IEP team, of course, would be the place to discuss that in conjunction with whatever the policy is that your district or states are considering.
Okay, great. What if a child was not attending school before distance learning began due to, for example, health issues? Can they now participate in some online learning? For example, if they were homebound before, can they try online learning now?
I mean, again, this would be something to communicate and decide with your team based on the facts for that child, what it is that they've already, what's in their program and what there's been an agreement about their learning. Common sense would say, I don't see why not, but again, I don't know everybody's facts. And so I think that's something that people need to communicate with their team and make the request.
Okay, there's definitely a theme here, Denise. I see,
yes,
what
there is.
I see what you're doing. What can I do if my school is not offering any services and is not responding to me? Not answering emails, not answering phone calls. We've seen that a little bit.
Yeah, so again, I think that, that documentation, putting concerns and correspondence in writing, copying different people at different levels in the school district, aside from just whoever is your contact on the IEP team. And if necessary, you may want to consult with an advocate or an attorney.
Okay. Okay.
Going on, okay. in your district at your time. I think initially we were encouraging people to be patient because everybody was in a situation, but at this point it's been 3, maybe almost 4 weeks. And so some level of communication and response from the districts to your requests or concerns should be expected, I think.
And should have already started, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. What are some recommendations for what parents should document and include in letters? When you're talking about corresponding with the school, document, 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 what does that mean?
Right. So I think, you know, try to be as short and concise as possible. Stick with the facts about what is happening or what your concerns are. My son used to be able to write his name. He now doesn't even know how to make the first letter. You know, whatever, and then what your request is, whether or not you think he's going to need additional services now or additional services once school begins. So again, keep it short, to the point, and include the facts, include your concerns, and include your requests or recommendations.
I like to tell parents to keep the emotion out of it. If you feel that you're starting to be very upset by the letter, or you're kind of getting your feelings out, take all of that out. You really just want just the facts, right? Nothing coming from the heart, unfortunately.
Wise advice, Monica.
Yeah. Let's see. Some parents have heard that the IDEA, the Individuals with Disabilities Education Act, may be repealed. Is this true, and what would that mean?
Well, there was some discussion in Congress. The only people who can repeal or waive any requirements under the IDEA are Congress. States cannot do that. The Secretary of Education cannot do that. There was some discussion early on by people saying, oh, all of the IDEA should just be waived during this school closure. But advocates all across the country, including most likely many of you, spoke up and said, absolutely not. We certainly, again, understand that there may be some timelines or some programs where the teams mutually decide to put a pause on there, but it doesn't make any sense to put a pause on the IDEA in general or totally, because many districts and students are, first of all, already providing lots of creative services. Why would we want to stop that? Mm-hmm. And second of all, you know, these, by virtue of the fact that students are eligible under the law, they've been recognized to need additional supports, additional services. And when faced with a crisis, we should not be using that as an excuse to just leave our children behind. We need to double down and figure out creatively how to be sure that they're included and have an equitable access to continuing their education.
That's great. That's great. And this is it. Any last thoughts or recommendations for us parents, Denise?
Well, the only other one I've heard a lot, Monica, is the question about extended school year. So yeah. I'll throw that in there. Okay. Again, that's not going to be, we don't know how long, whether schools will be able to reopen. If they do, you could certainly make the case if you haven't already had your child eligible, or your child hasn't already been determined to be eligible for extended school year, you may be able to make your case and use the documentation we've talked about repeatedly throughout today to say why they should have that service in the summer. But we don't know whether or not services are going to be able to open up over the summer. So again, document, and keep track of how your child's doing and what your recommendations are.
That's great. Thank you so much, Denise. We really appreciate your guidance here and all the work that COPA is doing for our families.
Oh, thank you. I really appreciate being invited, and wish everybody health and safety during this time.
Thank you.
Thank you, Denise and Monica, both for joining us today and sharing your expertise and your experience with the child neurology community. This concludes today's conversation, but for more resources and original Child Neurology Foundation programming to help you during COVID-19, check out the Child Neurology Foundation resource page at childneurologyfoundation.org COVID-19. Together, we will get through this, and together, we are all child neurology. Thank you.
Thank you.